You're listening to an encore presentation of the Weekend Real Estate Report.
Now back to the Weekend Real Estate Report on 105.7 The Fan.
All right, you're listening to Weekend Real Estate Report. Carl Delmont here with you. And once again, special guest of the show, Steve Ford. And we're just discussing his dad's legacy as president. And, you know, we did talk about the pardon and some other things going on there. But you also alluded to, you mentioned earlier about Greenspan, who most people remember Greenspan as the Fed chairman. But under your dad's administration, I think it was Burns who might have been chairman.
Burns was the Fed chairman, and Greenspan was a
economic advisor of some sort.
Exactly, yeah. young economic advisor. I mean, you look at dad's administration, and I have this great picture of all of them up at Camp David during one of their discussions. And you look around the room, and there's a young Dick Cheney who was chief of staff, Don Rumsfeld, young guy. Alan Greenspan, all these guys were just the young Turks of the time.
Now, were these people that your dad appointed, or did he inherit some of those from Nixon?
No, those are Cheney and Rumsfeld. Dad called Rumsfeld back from Europe and asked him if he would be his chief of staff. And Rumsfeld said, I will if I can bring my assistant, would be a guy named Dick Cheney. And Dad was not familiar with Cheney at the time, so Rumsfeld brought Cheney in. Eventually, Rumsfeld went and became Secretary of Defense, and Cheney was moved up to be Chief of Staff. Greenspan, but there were some Nixon holdovers. You know, you had Frank Zarb, who became the energy czar, started with the Nixon administration. One of the great guys Dad had was Paul O'Neill, who later became Secretary of Treasury for the younger George Bush. But these were young guys at the time, and they were the, you know, cutting edge guys. It's funny, Alan Greenspan is one of our trustees for Dad's foundation that looks after his museum and library, and I had to call Chairman Greenspan on another matter, and we got to talking, and I asked him a question, Carl. I said, you know, Chairman Greenspan, I said, you've been around for four decades dealing with economic issues, and you were with Dad. You were one of the ones that wanted tax cuts and wanted to keep the federal budget from growing and things like that. And you've seen how fiscal policy has changed over the years. I said, today, you know, in a nanosecond, they're making stock trades and, you know, pennies or, you know, just a fraction of a second makes difference in how much money you make and everything like that. And I said, gosh, how do you do it today? And he related a story. He said, back in, the late 1800s, the financial news used to come over from Europe on ships. And it was, you know, obviously very slow. It took weeks to get across the Atlantic on markets and financial news. Well, there were pirates that would wait off the coast of America, and they would rob those ships a day out from the United States, rob that financial information, and they had quicker ships, and they could get to port quicker and trade on that news by being in port sooner than the, you know, authorities got there. And so basically, he was saying we've been, you know, people have been hacking and stealing, trading on news for like years. It's just different ways. Now we do it with computers, and they used to do it with pirate ships back then. So that's been going on for years, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a way to make a quick buck, people, it's funny, some of the smartest people in the world, if they would just put their intelligence to the power of good, because you figure there's a lot of these people in prison who've created some crazy crimes. And then they interview them, and you find these people are like Mensa candidates, but I guess they took the easy way out. You also mentioned, like, so with Greenspan, and he's still around with your, like you said, he's the, did you say treasurer for your?
Greenspan was an economic advisor.
I mean, for your dad's foundation now.
Oh, he's one of our trustees.
Oh, trustees, okay.
Yeah, we have a private foundation which supports Dad's museum and library. The way presidential museum and libraries are supported is there's a private arm, which is what Dad and the family and the trustees, we raised the money, $20 million years ago to build the museum and library that houses all his papers and artifacts and things like that, and then you hand that over physically to the United States government, the archivists who look after the Library of Congress and all the presidential museums. And so we raise the money, we build the building, we hand them the artifacts, the papers, the document, and then they are the basically the gatekeepers of presidential papers. And but constantly our foundation, we have to re-raise money privately again to keep the building going, to, you know, do all those kind of things. So it's all done with private funds, and then the government runs it, and that's true with any presidential museum or library.
Now, you just had a special event, I want to say, 2 months ago. You had Bob Scherer, and I don't know if Greenspan was there, some others. You had a big event, I guess it was in Michigan, right?
Yeah, we had our annual dinner and our board meeting, and again, a lot of our trustees, you know, Greenspan, Secretary Henry Kissinger, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, a lot of administration people came in, and we had our big dinner open to the public, and we had a great night because I made some phone calls and brought in, asked Vice President Cheney if he would sit on a kind of an open round table panel with me. I called Bob Schieffer, who was a young newsman for CBS, you know, way back when Dad was president. He was just, you know, a young guy. No one ever thought, you know, Bob Schieffer was going to be sitting behind the anchor desk, you know, 30, 40 years later. Ben Stein, who was a young speechwriter for the Nixon administration, mm-hmm. was a holdover, worked for Dad for a while.
He has a degree in economics, right?
Oh, yeah. Ben Stein, very sharp guy.
Yeah. We don't think of him as a comedian, and most people remember him Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. But he, so I put together this panel, and myself, Vice President Cheney, Bob Schieffer, and Ben Stein were on stage for about 45 minutes telling the funny little stories and of what we've all gone through in our own perspective. You know, mine was as a young teenager in the White House. Obviously, Vice President Cheney was as chief of staff. Ben Stein, you know, told stories about being a speech writer in the Nixon and Ford White House. And Bob Schieffer brought the, you know, the radio and TV perspective of newscasting. So it was a great night. We celebrated Dad's 100th birthday. And one of the funny stories, and this will tell you the life of a president. I'll give you two quick stories. Dad had a golden retriever. He and Mom had a golden retriever named Liberty that lives at the White House with him. And Dad, in the middle of the night, the dog got up and went over and nuzzled him out of bed and basically said, listen, let Dad know the dog had to go out and do its business at 2 a.m. in the morning. Dad put on his bathrobe and his slippers and, you know, left the second floor family quarters of the White House, went down the elevator at 2 a.m., walked out to the diplomatic entrance with the dog at 2 a.m., stood out on the front lawn of the White House, and, you know, Liberty went out and did her business. And so Dad took the dog and was going to go back in the White House, go back up to his bedroom, and the door was locked. And here the President of the United States at 2 a.m. is knocking on the door at the White House trying to get back in because the Secret Service had not noticed that he left. So that's the life of a president. It's just like everybody else. You know, your wife locks you out of the house in the middle of the night, and you got to stand there knocking in your pajamas. So that sort of brought it all down to the real level, the humanity of the office. The other story, energy policy was a big thing when Dad was president because the price of oil went up so much. And one of the things they did besides putting together the strategic reserves was they came up with the thing everybody hated, which was the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit to save gas, to save oil, and help fight OPEC. OPEC had never really flexed its muscles until the early 1970s when they cut off oil and the price skyrocketed. So Dad put in the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, and the governor of Montana called him and said, Mr. President, that's the stupidest idea in the world. That may work back in the East Coast where you have bumper-to-bumper traffic and nobody can go very fast anyway, but, you know, that's a dumb idea, and we out in the West, we've got big open roads, and we can't go 55 miles an hour, so on and so on. And Dad said, listen, as president, it's just impossible that, one size fits all. We just have to chip in and do this. And a couple of weeks later, the governor of Montana called him back and said, Mr. President, I just wanted to tell you what I did to counteract what you did. He says, I got the state legislature to pass a law in Montana that a speeding ticket is only $5. And once you get one, you're paid up for the rest of the year. And Dad just had to laugh. He said, that's the life of a president. You try to do things good for the nation, and it just doesn't fit everybody, but that's the life of a president.
Now, we talked about Greenspan, and I remember when I was, not that far out of college, but his famous expression, irrational exuberance. I mean, at the time, Wall Street hung on every word he said, whereas now the big thing with the Fed is more transparency, things of that nature, and the Fed speak isn't quite as technical as Mr. Greenspan. In your dealings with him, has he ever made any comments on the current economy and maybe his thoughts on how the quantitative easing, these other things are going?
He hasn't. I haven't talked to him recently. But, even today, the stock market every day hangs. Anytime Bernanke gets ready to say a word, they dissect it word by word. Mm-hmm. And, is there going to be easing? When's it going to happen? Is it going to happen this fall or 2014? And you see these huge shifts in the stock market because of words that come out of the Fed. That, I can't imagine how tough a job that is, that we all sit on pins and needles and trade all that money and on the words of the Fed chairman. It is still that way, and Greenspan was just a little harder to understand. You're exactly right. The interesting thing is, I think what made Dad's presidency successful and respected, I guess, it, the Democrats maybe didn't always agree with him, but they knew that she was willing to find a compromise. Mm-hmm. And that is something that's gotten so toxic today in politics, that the compromise doesn't seem to be found. Dealing with Congress, when Dad, I remember him sitting around the dinner table telling us when he first approached Congress for a tax cut, he threw out, this was back in 1974, 75, he threw out the figure of $16 billion tax cut. Now, that sounds like nothing today, but back then, the federal budget was basically $280 billion, so a 15 to $20 billion tax cut meant a lot. He knew that Congress, the Democratic Congress, was not going to accept that. They wanted a bigger tax cut. But he started at 16. They finally settled. The Democrats at that time wanted $29 billion, and Dad finally, they settled at $22 billion. But that was his 26 years in Congress of dealing and knowing how Congress operated. So he went in knowing this is all negotiable. We find some ground in the middle. Tip O'Neill, who went on to become Speaker of the House, Democratic Speaker of the House, was one of Dad's best friends. And Tip O'Neill used to come to our house. He and Dad would fight on the floor of Congress about ideas, and then Tip O'Neill would be at our house having dinner or drinks with Mom and Dad. They don't do that today in Washington anymore. Democrats don't associate with the Republicans, vice versa. That's not the way it was when Dan was president.
And I think that's part of our problem today, too. I always make the parallel that, here in Maryland, most people love the Ravens. And it's almost, assumed that if you love the Ravens, you have to hate Pittsburgh. And yeah. It's one of those things where sometimes I think, wow, it's so representative of the Republicans and the Democrats. Like, why can't we just appreciate it's a great football game and it's always going to be a great football game? And guess what? They get to do it again in a couple months. But it seems that there's just such vitriol and everything else going on and nothing really gets accomplished.
Well, Dad believed in the answers were found in the middle, not way on the right or way on mm-hmm. the left. And I remember he was playing golf. Dad was president and Tip O'Neill. They were playing golf at Burning Tree Country Club there, and Tip O'Neill put his arm around my dad, and he said, "Mr." And he says, "Jerry," he called him Jerry, didn't even call him Mr. President. He says, "Jerry, isn't this a great country?" He says, "Here, you and I can be out here playing golf and enjoying a great friendship, and 16 months from now, when the elections are on, I'll be traveling around the country trying to kick your ass." And but they had a great respect for each other, and in fact, about a year ago, we unveiled Dad's statue in the rotunda in Washington, D.C. at the United States Capitol. He will be the last president put in the rotunda. And the one quote we put on the statue was actually from Tip O'Neill, Democratic Speaker of the House. And I'll paraphrase for you here, mm-hmm. Carl, but it's very close. He basically said, "God has been very good to America. During the Civil War, he sent Abraham Lincoln. And during Watergate, he sent Gerald Ford, the right man at the right time, to heal a nation." And not often do you hear Democrats say that about Republicans, or Republicans say that about Democrats. And so that was a great honor for us as a family.
Yeah, I think that profoundly underscores what we talked about earlier in the show, just the sacrifices that your dad made, not for party, not for person, but for country. And you know, I guess it just harkens back to the way things were back then. You know, it's today. I mean, you see people, not to get overly patriotic, but even at like sporting events, yeah, people only take their hats off or put their hand over their chest. Come on, man, it's a minute and a half of your life. Really, you can't show that kind of respect for the history behind that. But that's probably a whole nother topic. You know, a couple other things. You know, we have a lot more to discuss, obviously, with you, and I really do appreciate you coming on. Once again, we're talking to Steve Ford, son of the late President Gerald Ford. We're talking some great stories about his dad's presidency, the economy, some great stories from, you know, major figures in political and then really just U.S. history. But we have a lot more to discuss. I want to get into a little bit more at the White House when we come back. Your teen years, so to speak, there. And then let's talk more about your personal life and when we come back and talk about the movies and some other things you've been in, because you've just got a great story, and I could hear it almost every month. Not to patronize you, I every time we talk, there's a little bit of different things coming out, and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't know that. So very entertaining, very worthwhile, and I appreciate you calling in. We're going to do a quick break. When we come back, we're going to finish up with more with Steve Ford. So keep listening. You're listening to Weekend Real Estate Report. Carl Dumm on here with you, and we'll be back in a couple.
The Weekend Real Estate Report will be right back on 105.7 The Fan.